And to get you in the mood, what's 33 take away 16? If you can answer correctly in less than 10 seconds, your maths is normal. And if not, you can join me in the Rubbish at Maths camp. But before you laugh it off and say that it doesn't really matter and you've never been any good at maths, listen up.
It's something that really, really frustrates me, is that parents will say to their children, don't worry, I was always useless at maths. And it's as if, OK, well, that's OK then. You know, you don't hear parents say, oh, don't worry, I could never read and write. But you certainly hear it in maths.
It distresses me enormously. And most particularly because in other countries this is not the case, particularly in the Far East. You would never find people admitting not to be able to do maths. We have to not accept this. And so around polite dinner tables, we do not say, I never could do maths.
And when even the former Chief Secretary to the Treasury can't manage to get his times tables right on Five Live, you do begin to wonder.
Finally, Mr. Byers, what are 8 sevens?
8 sevens. I was worried you were going to ask me this. I think it's 54, but...
I think it's 56, actually 56.
56. Well, there you are. It shows my age, I'm afraid.
I'm sorry, that was...
A fine attempt at an excuse there from Stephen Byers. But today there will be absolutely no excuses. And if you're still struggling with that 33 minus 16 sum, let me put you out of your misery. The answer's 17. Oh, and by the way, you've already had four times longer than you should have had to work that one out. Today on Am I Normal, we'll find out if your ability to do maths is normal and why it matters if it's not. Brian Butterworth, Professor of Neuropsychology at University College London.
In fact, if you've got poor numerical abilities, you're actually much more handicapped in everyday life than you are if you've got poor literacy abilities. I mean, there's been a couple of large cohort studies which show that if you're at the bottom 25% of maths ability, that is, you've got poor functional maths, you're more likely to be unemployed, you're more likely to have problems at work, getting promoted, getting raises, getting training. You're more likely at the age of 30 to be sick, both mentally and physically, and you're more likely to be arrested. And this is even if you've got good reading.
So maths really does count, and even more so than literacy. Mathematician Marcus de Sotoy.
It's not so much the things that you learn in mathematics that are important. I don't think I've ever used a sign in my real day life. But what I have used is the way of thinking, the logical way of thinking. And I think if people haven't got that idea of how to connect two ideas together, that impacts on so many bits of your life.
It means that you can't work out how long the cooking time should be for a joint, or grapple with credit card deals or mortgages, which, if you end up paying more than you should, could seriously affect your quality of life. So what level of math is normal? Brian Butterworth.
Normal is the ability to function reasonably competently in a numerate society. You've got to be able to figure out how much change you should get in a shop. You need to be able to check your bank account. You need to be able to set your DVD recorder to the right time. Things like that.
Well, I then fail on that one because I can't set the DVD recorder. I think it's dangerous to talk about normal mathematical ability because mathematics is so multifaceted that if somebody's having a problem in one area, they might have much greater strengths in another. And, you know, certainly checking your change is good, but even if you can't sort your change out, you might be good at mathematics in a different way.
My name's Emma King. I've recently finished doing a PhD at the University of Nottingham, which was in cosmology. So that's the study of the universe on very large scales, the beginning of the universe, the end of the universe, that sort of thing. So it's all done with sort of maths and calculations. Calculus, integration, differentiation. I did a little bit of general relativity that involves some tensor algebra, which I'm not even going to attempt to explain what it is because it will make no sense. It involves an awful lot of maths.
Which makes it all the more surprising to hear this.
I am atrocious at arithmetic, particularly mental arithmetic, which is a bit of a mystery to me. I never managed to master my times tables at school. I can't add up or subtract or multiply or divide in my head whatsoever.
So just how bad is bad? Are we talking not knowing 4 plus 3, 14 plus 13 or 141 plus 133?
I couldn't tell you the answer to any of those off the top of my head. 4 plus 3 was the first one, 4, 5, 6, 7. So I can get there, but I do have to do the counting. I can't just tell you 4 plus 3 is 7 straight off, which is a thing that I've seen other people do, which is a bit of a mystery to me, really.
I do know 4 plus 3 off the top of my head, but I'm ashamed to say that, like Emma, I resort to my fingers when it gets to what I think are hard sums, like 7 plus 8. To find out whether I'm normally bad or whether my trouble with maths is much more profound, I went to the Institute of Cognitive Neuroscience at UCL to be assessed by Brian Butterworth.
So, did you get maths O-level?
Eventually. It took 2 goes. I failed it twice. I was miserably bad at maths. I was in the top set for everything, but maths I was in the bottom set. I really found it very, very difficult indeed.
Is this true for all branches of maths or just sums? What about geometry?
I think I could do geometry. Mm-hmm. I didn't seem to have that much trouble with geometry, but it was just the sums and tables and anything that involved, you know, sort of trying to get numbers into their place. I didn't seem to have them under control.
Can I ask you a question that an interviewer once asked the chief inspector of schools on the radio? Let's see if you can do it. What's a half of 3/4?
Now, I know this is about common denominators, isn't it? So a half of 3/4, so you have to double both of those. So that's 6/8. Then half 6/8, and then... Is it 2/3?
No, at least you had a go. Chris Woodhead didn't even dare to have a go. No, the answer's 3/8.
Oh, right.
OK.
Well, now you know. Brian Butterworth was one of the first people to wonder if some people had a specific learning difficulty when it comes to numbers, in just the same way that people with dyslexia have a specific learning difficulty when it comes to literacy. The maths equivalent is called dyscalculia. Brian's developed a computer-based screening test for dyscalculia, to which I was led, kicking and screaming.
Hello. These activities will test your number skills against the clock.
OK.
See how fast you can choose the correct answers.
One of the things I had to do was match a written numeral like 7 with an equivalent number of randomly scattered dots. To the utter bemusement of my producer, and embarrassing to say, I found it really difficult to do without actually counting the dots one by one. At least the computer was encouraging.
Well done. You have finished this activity.
Next one.
Now, make sure it's more.
And so it went on.
How quickly and on, can you find which
and
is
on.
More?
And then there was a whole other set of nasty tests in which a nice lady subjected me to quick-fire death by maths.
173 plus 68. That's 173 plus 68.
Oh, this is torture. Like
We can have a break. If you
no, it's 173 mind. Plus 68.
That's correct.
173 plus 68. So that's like 170 plus... 70 is...
I got there in the end. 240 plus 3 minus 2, 241. But I fear it took me way too long. And then I got graded.
On the adding up and subtracting, you got a scaled score of 7, which is dull average.
Oh, dear.
So you're kind of borderline between, you know, seriously bad and dull average.
But what would the average person be able to do?
They'd be able to add two-digit numbers, like 99 plus 22, be able to do it within 10 seconds and do it accurately.
Oh, a lot of people are getting their stopwatches out on the sofa, about to test their partners. And that would make you normally competent.
Yeah.
As opposed to abnormally incompetent, like me.
Overall, Brian gave me a D for dyscalculia. Funny that, because actually D is a whole lot better than most of the grades I got for maths at school. No matter how hard I tried or how much homework I did, I just didn't get it. Dyscalculia is the new kid on the learning difficulties block, described variously as number blindness or maths dyslexia. In the light of my newly acquired label, I feel every sympathy for 10-year-old Oscar, who came with his mum to talk to me about his maths.
Maths, I kind of have a problem with. I just think in my head it's like it's going to take forever to do it, and I just get really confused.
But how do you find all your other schoolwork?
Easy enough for me to do, yeah. Because I think it's only the maths that I'm not very good at.
We brought it up in school several times and all his teachers had said, oh no, that he's perfectly fine and you shouldn't worry about it. So when we went to an educational psychologist and got the results of his tests, we were actually very shocked. I was expecting to be told that I was a fussing middle-class mother. There's always this sense that if you think there's something wrong and your child's not actually failing, that you're somehow implying that they ought to be top of the class, and you're just, there's a certain arrogance there. Like, I know my child should be top, and why aren't they? They're only in the middle, and that you should just accept that they're not particularly academic. So I was really not expecting to have such a big disparity. I mean, I think his test showed his underlying ability was on the 98th centile, so in the top 2% of the population, and his maths ability was below the bottom 10%. So, yeah, it was far worse. It was far worse than I thought it was going to be honest. So, yeah, we were quite despairing at that point.
So what did you do next?
Well, we did speak to the school, and his school is very good at linguistic dyslexia, but they admitted they had absolutely nothing in place for maths at all. And, in fact, I think they said there wasn't anybody in the entire borough who was qualified in maths dyslexia. And then,
which is astonishing.
It is quite. And I was thinking about this, and it's somehow an accepted thing to be able to do lots of other things but just not be able to do maths. And people are allowed to go through their lives not being able to do maths and having to work around it.
And for those of us with problems, work around it is what we have to do. I use a calculator, even for the simplest of sums. I constantly check any reference to numbers, but it's a vicious rumour that the main reason for choosing my partner was his maths degree from Oxford. Over the last 20 years, dyslexia has gone from denial that there was a problem to widespread screening of children in primary schools. But our awareness of the maths equivalent is still very limited. Writer Tony Atwood is one of a growing band of people trying to raise the profile of dyscalculia.
We're living in an era in dyscalculia terms, which is what dyslexia was living in 30 years ago. It's only just beginning to be realised. People still think you're odd, you're cranky, you're weird. If you can't actually do these things, people give you funny looks. Schools do not, at the moment, largely accept or acknowledge that there is something there called dyscalculia. The most important thing at this stage is to make the schools and the teachers aware that there are some people who have extreme difficulty with maths, that it has nothing whatsoever to do with their intelligence, and that there is a solution, and the solution involves teaching them in a radically different way.
I use clay for, I use a circle and then cut it up into parts. Helps with fractions and decimals. And clay work helps me look at it more visually and not just make me do it mentally, so I get really frustrated.
And tell me how you would do a sum like 7 times 8.
I would have eight little balls of seven and then count them all up and see what it added up to.
The basic premise is to manipulate the clay to gather a picture for each of these abstract concepts. So they have a concrete idea, something they can hold in their hands. It's a very kinesthetic way of working.
Because somebody said to me about the fiveness of five, and I had no idea what they were talking about. Absolutely none at all.
It's quite interesting. One of the tests that Oscar did was a very simple computer program where they had a circle with a number of dots in and a numeral next to it. And you had to say whether the numeral was the same as the number of dots in the circle. And it was only up to about 4 or 5. He said it was the most difficult thing he had ever done because he had no one-to-one matching of a numeral with its actual numerical equivalent. He didn't know what 5 meant.
You and me both, Oscar. But what do we actually know about dyscalculia? Brian Butterworth.
Dyscalculia is a specific disability in learning arithmetic and learning about numbers.
What's the prevalence, do you think? of dyscalculia?
Well, we've done a very large prevalence survey in Cuba. So we took over 11,500 children, the entire school population of one district in Havana, and we found a prevalence of about 6.8%, slightly more boys than girls on average.
And can that be extrapolated to Britain?
No reason why it shouldn't. We're assuming this is a congenital condition, and therefore it should be the same across countries.
Does that mean that, you know, if you get that hand of the cards, as it were, that you will have problems? Or is there some other influence? I mean, if you have, for instance, very good maths teaching and you're dyscalculic, will you escape?
In this case, we don't know whether genetics is destiny or not. It may be that you can be helped to become normal. On the other hand, it's not clear that you can. I mean, we just don't know. There haven't been enough long-term studies to be sure.
Brian would like every child who's struggling with maths to be screened for dyscalculia. Whilst this sort of screening would certainly help identify those whose innate ability is compromised by their neurological lot, not everyone is so convinced of its value. Tony Atwood.
I'm not sure that screening is actually going to be of any benefit here. The screening for dyslexia, to my mind, largely comes from the fact that we do have these special arrangements for people who are dyslexic. So that if an educational psychologist says, yeah, you've got dyslexia, then what happens is you can get extra time in your exams and all sorts of extra help at school and at university and so on and so forth. That's all fine. We don't have any of that with dyscalculia at the moment. It may come in the future, but not just now. So what really is the point of the screening? It gives you a label. Some people like labels. Some people feel much better. You know, they say, oh, you know, I really thought it was me. I thought it was just stupid. I thought I was the only one. Now I know and I'm dyscalculic. Great, I feel much better. Some people like that. But many others don't want to label. They just want to be able to do their maths.
Celia Hoyles is director of the National Centre for Teaching and Excellence in Maths and a former maths advisor to the government. What does she think?
I think it completely depends what we can do afterwards. I think we need to have programmes of teaching and learning that follow from that.
Does it matter, really, whether it's dyscalculia or just another problem that, you know, doesn't make you learn maths very quickly?
I think it probably does matter that the teacher understands what the root of the problem might be. So if it is a language problem, which language and maths go very much together, then I think the teacher needs to know that. If it's something to do with dyscalculia, they need to know that. If it's something to do with general motivation and they find mathematics completely incomprehensible and boring, you would have a different approach. And this is why I would always say that we need very high-class and high-quality teachers of mathematics for these particular young children.
We know now that the way of teaching these people is the same no matter that they're dyscalculic with a genetic problem or whether they've got maths anxiety or whether they just happen to miss a load of lessons or whether they didn't like the teacher or whatever. The way of actually helping these people is the same. So the key thing is the teacher simply says, OK, let's try teaching them in this radically different way. And you'll be amazed, absolutely stunned by the speed with which they can catch up.
What everyone is agreed on is that good maths teaching is a critical part of the equation for all children.
OK. Right, ready? Easy one to start with. So first one going in is 95. You need to work out what goes with 95 to make 100. Tell me now. Well done. OK. Next one, 88 is going in. Think about getting to 90, then to 100.
12.
Well done.
A Year 5 maths lesson at Muschamp, a primary school in the London borough of Sutton.
So there's another one up there, okay? This one is finding the difference between 76 and 149. Work it out in your head. Talk to each other, okay? Picture this. You've got it up here. Picture it in your head. Off you go.
I've seen 70 and 140, and I know that 70 doubled or multiplied by 2 is 140. And then you have that 6 and that 9 left, which is a... So, okay.
Or you could do, like, on it on the number line, figure it out, like, do a number line in your head and that.
Wouldn't the answer be 73? Because 6 of 3 equals 9.
For a child with a serious maths problem, a lesson like this probably won't be much help. But, to be fair, it's not designed for them. Sutton is one of the few education authorities that tries to identify and support children with specific maths learning difficulties. Joanne and Isaac are in Year 6. They use plastic shapes with different numbers of holes in them to help them visualise and understand numbers.
Is 45 an odd number or an even number?
I think it's odd.
You think it's odd? Good, that's a good idea to have an idea.
45, you can't actually share it, because if I have two and then Isaac have two, there's one left, and that means there'd be one left, so I have to give it to the other person.
That wouldn't be fair then, would it? One of you would have more than the other. Mm. And the next number?
It's quite useful, because like, when you're older, you need to learn maths more.
And this is more better, because it helps us do our numbers. But with the other maths group, it's like not that helpful. Yeah. It feels like another subject, but we found this maths group a little easier.
With the help of this specialised teaching, both Isaac and Joanne have made some progress. And despite their ongoing difficulties, both say maths is now their favourite subject, which in itself strikes me as something of a triumph. Compare and contrast with my miserable experiences in Form 1, when Mrs. Glass, my hated maths teacher, used to put me on a stool in the corner because I couldn't do my 7x table. I can remember having to stand on that stool week after week, usually sobbing in shame and frustration. There are, of course, many reasons why people may find maths difficult. Maths anxiety is one of them. It may sound ridiculous, but Tony Atwood says it's quite common and very real.
The problem with maths, the unique problem with maths, is if you miss a bit at the beginning, you can't pick it up later on. So if you're in a history class that's taking you all the way through European history and you have appendicitis when they're teaching the Spanish Armada, then by and large that doesn't really inhibit your ability to learn about the First World War. Whereas if you miss out the bit on fractions, it's extremely difficult to pick up the division of fractions later on. But because the lessons have moved on, that's what happens. As a result of that, what we find is many young people, in fact many adults as well, end up with what is now called maths anxiety, a real fear of handling maths. So they back away from maths. They actually, you know, physically come out in a sweat, feel their stomach muscles tightening up, all the symptoms of anxiety as a psychological problem.
Emma King, the one with a PhD in theoretical cosmology, didn't enjoy maths at school at all, at least not in the beginning.
I didn't do very much homework and things like that when I first got to secondary school. It made me feel anxious and upset, so I avoided doing it. It wasn't until quite a while later when we started to cover things like trigonometry, algebra, matrix calculations, things like that, that I started to realise that actually this might be quite fun.
And even top mathematician Marcus de Sautoy wasn't, and still isn't, particularly enthusiastic about arithmetic.
It was only when I had a teacher when I was about 12 or 13 who brought the subject to life for me, all that pattern searching, the beautiful and creative side of mathematics, that I really got into it. And I think we have to remember that mathematics is much more than just arithmetic. Arithmetic is somehow the grammar of this subject, but you can actually find different ways to navigate through the mathematical world. For example, Roger Penrose, who is at the University of Oxford with me, he's an expert in something called twister theory. And if you look at his notebook, it's just full of beautiful little pictures. And that's the language that he's developed to be able to navigate his way through these difficult pieces of mathematics. There are many ways of looking at the world, and some of them aren't just through number and language, and some of them are much more pictorial, but they can all be very mathematical.
Marcus suggests that an ability to play chess or do Sudoku is perhaps a better indicator of underlying maths potential than whether or not someone can recite their times tables. Chess, plastic shapes, clay. It's not necessarily easy or quick, but it can transform someone's experience of maths. Now, most of the time, 10-year-old Oscar is up and away.
It's made an incredible difference, actually. There are certain things, like telling the time, for example. I mean, using two clay clocks, Oscar learned to tell the time with an analogue clock in about 15 minutes. And he's had no problem with it ever since. And that's a real life skill which you can't function without. It's still a struggle sometimes because he'll come up against things that he hasn't been taught using clay methods. And it's such a block. Like I said, it's like banging your head on the wall trying to get it through to him until you work out a way of representing it in clay, and then it'll click. I would say he's advanced hugely, but you have good days and bad days. You have days where you just think, I don't know that this has helped at all, and then other days where he'll sit there and rattle off some times tables and tell you the time and get loads of sums right, and you just think, eureka, it's just brilliant.
I wonder how I would have turned out if I'd had access to clay like Oscar. Maybe I would have become a doctor, which is what I always wanted to do, but which, since I couldn't do the maths, I had to abandon as a career. It's too early to tell if Oscar will be the next Emma King. Emma, of course, was never screened for dyscalculia. But I wonder if she had been. It's possible it might have put her off maths for life and stopped her going on that voyage of mathematical discovery that ended with a cosmology PhD.
Obviously, I am a person who is very bad at mental arithmetic and very good at maths, and I wouldn't want other young people being so dreadfully put off maths by being bad at arithmetic that they never ever come and look at it again. And I think that would be a big shame if people were put off some of the much more exciting and to me, interesting parts of maths because they weren't very good at arithmetic.
There is much more to maths than an ability to do simple sums. But I remain ashamed by my maths, and I don't think that anyone should accept that being rubbish at maths is normal. As far as I'm concerned, numeracy is an essential part of the mental capital that you need to establish in order to help you get the best out of your life. And the good news is that Celia Hoyles says wherever you are on the spectrum, you can always do better.
The one thing we know is that whatever is normal now, we can do better, because all the tests have shown that there are trends over time that people improve. And with the right sort of teaching, your normal can go up.
So even if I'm not normal, as an adult, I could still improve my maths ability?
There is no doubt about that. That's why I don't say maths ability, because it's really something that can change over time. It can change with good teaching. It can change with interest. And change with understanding what maths is about rather than just learning what the teacher told you.